Have you seen the trailer to Rambo 4?
Yeah. Oh, how awesome is that?
I think I came in my pants.
I was like, holy shit, man. That's like
Violent. So violent. Here's the crazy thing.
Because it's like 3 minutes and nothing, and then boom. And then he just decides to stand on the Jeep and machine gun the guy point blank.
With 50 caliber, just right to the guys. He's slitting people's throats. He's cutting their guts open. He's, it's a brutally violent.
It's a total commentary on that.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Here's the thing that immediately followed that. The studio wants to cut it down to PG-13. And here's the other thing. The current cut they have, they say, is NC-17. So what the hell are they going to cut to go from NC-17 to PG-13?
You know, I haven't seen that movie.
He doesn't want to. He wants to keep it. That's why he's the one who cut that trailer. He cut that trailer himself. That's the one on
Ain't It Cool?
That's why it looks so crappy. It looks like what is it? You know, it's just like a bunch
scenes,
of
scenes. Yeah.
Yeah. Random scenes slung together.
It does feel a little slow, but as a trailer.
Yeah.
I wonder about that because I haven't seen that that documentary. This film is not yet rated,
right?
But they talked to the South Park guys and all the other stuff about how it's pretty arbitrary sometimes with how they decide to rate stuff. Sometimes I think it's nudity is a big one. I think violence is actually the last to go if you're talking about ratings.
Yeah, so there might be some. But there's a certain type of violence that they absolutely cannot leave in a PG-13 film. For instance, jumping in the back of a Jeep and shooting a guy with a 50 caliber gun and he explodes all over like pancake batter.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't know Rambo 4. I mean John Rambo, because that's the way you do it now.
John Rambo. They should have called Live Free or Die Hard just John McClane.
It should have been called
PG-13 John McClane.
Oh, that's also PG-13.
PG-13, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big trend
and
now.
And Bruce Willis has been actually, you know what? They're technically still saying it's not rated actually, I think on the last thing.
Okay.
But the last thing I heard was that it's going to be PG-13 and Bruce Willis is now a blogger and as you've seen that he's really putting himself out there on the internet.
Did you see?
And I saw that the whole thing where he left the.
No, I don't know anything about Bruce Willis. Oh, okay. You finish your thing and then I'll.
Yeah, he's been conversing with diehard fanboys on like message boards and like leaving like video messages on sites and stuff now. So you can tell it's him and it's not just some guy who thinks he's Bruce Willis said this, and he's like. I guarantee you this is still going to be so awesome, and it's really going to be action-packed, and it's still going to be violent and stuff, even though it's not rated R. Yeah. But I don't know.
I mean, on some level, yes. I don't know. I think that it's sort of a good thing, because you can still tell a pretty good action story and keep it at PG-13. I think that the idea to push things down to PG-13 for the sake of
audience, for the sake of audience,
whatever,
yeah.
Can be kind of stupid. And that's probably like what happened in something like Alien versus Predator. But I think the thing is that I'll bet our love of the 80s and everything else, a lot more movies were rated either R or PG that should have been in that PG-13 rating because it didn't exist in the 80s. I'll bet a lot of the movies we loved that were rated R, if you really look at them, and then you compare them to a PG-13 movie that comes out now, you'll be like, they're about the same. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the push now is to sort of get away from calling things, from getting things rated R for some weird reason, because it's actually starting to mean something now, like it never did to us when we were kids.
Well, you know, another thing they're doing now is actually, this was just came out in the news last week, or the week before, but they're, the whole government getting in your business and telling you not to smoke thing is coming to a head where they are leaning on the MPAA to give things an automatic R rating if there's cigarette smoking in a film. And they said unless there is a historical context, it's in the 50s, it's in a time before they didn't know that cigarettes were going to kill you. You know, you mentioned that Alien versus Predator had some sort of problems because it was.
Well, I don't know. That could have been a problem beyond that.
No, I'll tell you the main problem. It was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yeah.
That's probably the main thing. Though he did do one of my favorite films, which is Event Horizon. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I've heard that the director's cut on that makes a lot more sense.
I don't even know about how much sense it made, but that film actually frightened me in the theaters. I don't know why, but there was something really scary about it.
Me too, yeah. When I saw it.
Something really frightening about it.
I think it's the idea of a ship floating in space.
Yeah.
kind of
a ship that's the gateway.
I've got a couple John Carpenter movies I'm sitting on. One is called Prince of Darkness.
Just watched it two nights ago.
Sounds like it's going to scare the holy hell out of me when I like little kids scared. Like I'll watch it late at night in my apartment and then I'll go to sleep. I got woken up a couple nights ago because I live out in the woods and like by some critters fighting outside like my apartment. It woke me up. There was like two foxes or something, but it doesn't matter when it's screeching in the woods at night. They're mountain lions where I live.
That's why I won't live in the woods. I refuse to live in the woods at any point in my life.
Kill you.
Well, I need to live in suburbs.
I'd be afraid of Prince of Darkness coming after.
You know, Prince of Darkness, I'm not gonna do the thing what we just talked about where I tell you it's good or it's bad, then you have certain expectations.
Well, I heard a review by a guy that does some good podcasting. I kind of what did he say?
What did he say?
He's a huge John Carpenter fan.
Same here. I love John Carpenter.
And he says that the Prince of Darkness falls into what's called the John Carpenter like apocalypse trilogy.
Yeah, loose apocalypse trilogy. The Thing.
The Thing. It's like The Thing, Prince of Darkness, and then Mouth of Madness. And so I think I'll watch those like in order, and I've got them all somewhere.
You've seen The Thing, right?
I haven't seen it in such a long time.
I just actually just watched that again recently too because I own it. But
you do? You have
a
DVD?
Yeah.
You gotta let me borrow.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I want to watch the commentary too.
That is not only I think is it his best film, but it's one of the best horror films I think I've ever watched personally. And I'm not being like some John Carpenter nerd about that. I just honestly think it's great. I do have a thing about John Carpenter, which is
no pun intended.
Aspect I really enjoy is that he can take the biggest sounding subject, for instance, the Prince of Darkness thing, or anything else, and he can turn it into every single thing turns into this claustrophobic thing where everyone's trapped somewhere in a building or in a room or whatever. And that's the John Carpenter thing. It's like, you know, in The Mouth of Madness wasn't so much like that. The Thing is definitely like that, but The Thing's almost...
Even Big Trouble in Little China is like
that. And
it's like this like universal God thing, and then really it's just about them in this building.
Exactly.
I get what you mean about that. There's always this feeling that the characters need to escape. Then you just run away, and you always feel that kind of terror, that tension.
Watch The Ghosts of Mars again, and if you'll notice one thing in that entire movie, which is they're technically outside in Mars, but there is blackness beyond the firelight and beyond the buildings, and it's like they're in a big black room the entire film. It's like they're in a big soundstage. And I love it. I absolutely love it about it. Like, you know, it's this claustrophobic thing that like it creeps you out no matter what it is.
Yeah.
You can make the dumbest idea in the world. Ghosts of Mars is a really stupid idea, but I love the film. It just pulled it off well. And the thing about The Thing is that it has it almost doesn't seem like one of his films, and this is the only reason why. Because Ennio Morricone did the music, and it wasn't John Carpenter.
Oh, it's no John
He didn't
Carpenter
do his own. It's not this going on the whole time. Do, 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 do. With the keyboard. Do, do, do. The entire.
You're doing the Snake Plissken
opening. Yeah, The entire. The entire. Which goes on the entire movie.
That's fantastic.
Here's the whole soundtrack for Prince of Darkness. Do, 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 do. Do. For 2 hours.
Jay Chiel, the guy that did the review. Said like that was like some of the creepiest shit he's ever heard.
It just does that constantly. Yeah,
John Carpenter's music is awesome. I love the opening to Escape from L.A. That's like some of my favorite, like just like hard hitting, like because it's really synthy.
It's trying to
be hard handed, but it's like at the same time it's like got that gay synthy sound.
And every single soundtrack has some sort of phrase that sounds like the Halloween music from it.
Yeah.
And there's this part in Prince of Darkness where it almost goes dee doo doo dee doo. It almost does that, and then it kind of drops out, like he doesn't do it anymore.
Oh, crying!
But you know who else does that is it's not something you can just tell automatically, but you always see it in the credits is Robert Rodriguez. A lot of times will
do
his own music and then perform it, and which Carpenter does too, but he's doing it on a synthesizer. But or Rodriguez will do it with I think Rodriguez plays drums and everything too, but he plays guitar and all that stuff. And actually, there was in Planet Terror, there was a few like rock sounding songs, and it was his own band. Like he does everything. So now we see here in the background, we've got Darth Maul's about to...
This was kind of cool.
He's about to kill Qui-Gon Jinn.
That's the thing I like the most
after
about...
After a few
I like
more
how he hits the thing, too.
Yeah.
But I just like that there was more lightsaber battles because there was Jedis in the first few episodes.
This was actually something they did well in this first one, was this climactic lightsaber battle thing that they didn't do so well in the next two, which is, they didn't, you know, the third one had it with Obi-Wan and Anakin, which they had to have, but this one was a more enjoyable looking fight, I think. Maybe it's because of the exotic nature of Darth Maul and...
It could have been. You know, I don't know. I got a kick out of some of the stuff with in episode two, where he was fighting Dooku for a bit.
Oh, that yeah.
I mean that looked like.
This one just did it more for me. This fight scene seemed more like one that you would have seen in like Return of the Jedi or something, and the other two seemed like just kind of things. You know, there's a real tone change in these movies compared to the direction of the first three, which is kind of to be expected, but yeah. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that George Lucas has no idea how to direct a movie. You know, you can tell by leaps and bounds how much better Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi were directed than the first Star Wars, just because...
Do you think that's a directing thing, or do you think that it's just the fact that it's a better-crafted story?
And well, that, too.
And Lawrence Kasdan.
Well, Lawrence Kasdan, and then Irving Kirshner, too, but they... But really,
what did those two do? Irving Kirshner wasn't that great.
Irving Kirshner was almost a nobody after
and
that.
So was the guy that directed Return was like a nobody. I think a lot of that got fixed in editing. So, I don't know, man. I'm going to argue. I think Lucas is an okay... I like THX 1130. I like the minimal style.
I didn't like it.
I really liked
American Graffiti. I thought that was really good.
That was good. Yeah, I liked American Graffiti, too.
Lawrence Kasdan is actually a really great director. He is
he
a great...
He hasn't
Yeah. No. But, you know, he did Return of the Jedi. And, Jake Kasdan, his son, is a really crappy director. I don't
know. He did that OC movie, right?
He did OC. He did that one that just came out with Adam Brody as well, In the Land of Women.
In the Land of Women.
I think he did, unless I'm thinking of Ridley Scott's son, this one called Zero Effect with Bill Pullman, where he plays a...
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah, have you seen that?
I kind of
That was actually a pretty fun little movie.
It was Ben Stiller and Bill Pullman.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And he's like the esoteric detective.
Right, and that and that was and he was like a hypochondriac, like shut in, germaphobe, that was actually, I thought, pretty well done, because at that time I think Jake Kasdan was only like 23 or something like that when he directed that. He was really young. That's the thing, you know, the best way to become a director in Hollywood is that your dad is one.
Doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt at all, huh? And right when I said that, Ian just rolled his eyes. You can tell how much he enjoys when someone gets to become a director because of nepotism.
Oh, no, I think I was rolling my eyes because I was looking over to check out that lightsaber, even though it's not in widescreen, and I should just not even bother, because I don't want to... I get burned out on stuff.
Lawrence Kasdan, man, also wrote Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, that's what I said. He didn't direct any of them.
He directed Return of the Jedi.
No, he didn't.
Who directed it?
Some British guy who died right after.
Really?
Yeah, Lawrence Kasdan just assisted Lucas in writing, I think, the Indiana Jones movies. And
right, yeah, he wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And the Star Wars movies. I mean, Episode 5 and Episode 6. You know what I do hate? In all the Star Wars documentaries,
Richard Marquand.
They always give you the entire title of the episode they're talking about. Like, in Episode 4, A New Hope, they talked about it. Yeah, so why don't you just say in Star Wars?
I just call it Star Wars, yeah. It's Star Wars.
But it's the opposite of what I hate about the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, which I haven't even seen. Is like they're so pretentious, and their ads are just like, pirates! Fuck you guys.
Jake Kasdan was 23 when he made Zero Effect. That was a good guess by me. Good job, man.
That was a good guess by you. Zach's got the guess your age booth at the county carnival.
Guess your weight.
Guess your weight.
Guess your weight and win some crap.
Get it wrong.
You've seen The Jerk, right?
Yeah.
Don't tell me you don't like that movie.
I don't know. I don't remember
liking
it as much as everyone liked it. I do remember there being like a bit about airplane seats and the guy couldn't afford like his on his Learjet and that being pretty funny.
The people come and ask him for money. And then one of the funniest things was that this Mexican priest comes and says, I'm going to show you some film now and you might want to sit down and watch this. And then he shows him this thing where this, like, it's like a cockfighting ring, this like small ring, and the seats all wrapped around it, almost like the thing where Rambo fights in, so
in Rambo 3.
Right. And so Steve Martin in another role comes in.
Me, Colonel. Dude, no Troutman in Rambo 4, because he's dead, right?
I think he is dead, yeah.
That's going to suck. I'm going to have trouble
with
that.
They should digitally add him back in.
Just so he could have some line about, you know, come on, John, it's never over for you.
Right. Troutman was really a manipulative guy. You know, they try to make him out to be a, this good guy, but he's a good guy in the series. But he's really
make a Billy Goat puke.
But yeah, so Steve Martin walks in to the ring and he has this box, and everyone's like, yeah. And Steve Martin's like, what is this? The jerk Steve Martin. And then the guy on screen pulls out three kittens, and he's like,
fighting,
it's cat juggling. He's like, cat juggling. I've heard about this. And so Steve Martin starts. He's holding three real kittens, and they cut away, and they cut back to the film, and he starts juggling these three fake, really fake-looking kittens balled up. And you hear them going, wah, wah, wah. And Steve Martin back in the home is like, turn this off. I can't watch anymore. And he's like, take any amount. He gives him the checkbook. Like, it's just throwing away money.
I think I remember that.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought that was pretty good.
I probably like that movie if I watched
it. Yeah, Carl Reiner was I thought he was one of the greatest comedy directors ever.
He's still alive. He's
in
Ocean 13.
He's 400 years old now.
Sounds like a subdural hematoma to me.
Oh, it does it? Well, it's not your job to diagnose. But I thought, her. You thought, just go. 3 weeks of nursery school and you think you know it all? Well, you'll still be wet behind the ears. It's not subdural hematoma, it's epidural. Ha! God damn, that makes me mad.